if we want money, revenue is the name of the game, R. And I'd say go a step above that, a little more existential, and value is the name of the game. So what we're trying to do as a business is create value for a market, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we should be focused on. And so that's what I do. I don't talk about money. I don't talk about how much we're going to make. How are we providing value to market? In what ways are we getting our own way? In what ways do we not understand that market? Or what ways can we tell a story to that market that we're solving a problem that maybe they don't understand?
John Ivy, are you going to do stand-up? Have you done stand-up?
No.
You should. I've done it three times.
I would go. I'm not opposed to it, but if I did,
yeah,
I wouldn't be able to work anymore.
Why?
Because I would be like, you said what? It's just a joke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doesn't matter. You know what I like to do? I'll sometimes get on LinkedIn and I'll just make comments. Then I don't post them. I just screenshot them and save them for later. And I have a whole library of things that I should have said, but I never
said. John, we're the same. I do the same thing, except it's not on LinkedIn. It's in my family chat.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I send it to Lindsay.
Yeah, I'll be like,
should I post this?
Well, yeah, I'll be like, no, I'll say something like, should I say this to grandma? And I'll send it to like my wife and she'll be like, if you say that, we are going to be kicked out of the family chat forever. Yeah. And it's not even my family chat. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Dude, you got to do, but you could probably find some good stand-up routine because if you get big enough, you can get that stand-up FU money and then you can say whatever you want. You know what I mean? You're in the Andrew Schultz world now. You can say whatever you want.
I don't know if I'm on that level, but certainly just for fun. Yeah. I could probably come up with some stuff. Probably just be like, here's what happened to me when I was working in Silicon Slopes. Like, I'll tell a story and everyone will be like, oh, it's so funny. I'm like, no, it's really happened, guys. It's not supposed to be funny. You're like,
hey, and the best comedy, you know, we learned the best comedy comes from trauma. Yeah. So if you got a traumatic story, it's going to be funny and you'll be fine.
It's like everything that is a trope in tech, you would expect. Yeah, exactly how it happened. And it's funny.
All right. You got
one.
I did
not make that up.
You got one in mind? You gonna tell one?
You can
redact names.
Just like and some companies. 26-year-old founder who's like, I just need A players. We got some B players on the team. We got C players on the team, but I need A players. So like, sell more. Okay. And he's like, oh boy, I got my work cut out for me on this one. I'm like, all right, now he's gone. Everything he just said was wrong. Let's start over. You know, that kind of stuff. Just like the bro culture that you're like, is this like happening? Am I on candid camera?
Yeah, you're like am I being punked or whatever?
Prank show? No, he's really going to say that. Okay, we're that stuff, you know.
I've been there.
You're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Guys, we just need to sell more.
You're like, no shit.
That's where we would start, but like maybe we should ask why.
Yeah.
Maybe we should find out what it is that we should be selling. Maybe we should ask our market maybe a few questions before we just show up.
Yeah. But you get some of these fiery young tech guys, huh? My question's always been like, how does that happen with these VCs, man? When I first learned about VCs, for me, it was kind of like the VC is the game is that game is wild, right? You like to begin with, you know that what is it like 95% of your company or 90% of your companies are just not going to make it.
Yeah, yeah.
You're banking on like, and then you know that only like 2% are going to really pay you back for the 100. And then that 8%, you're going to make something. You know what I mean? So like really only 10% of your companies are going to make anything.
Right.
And to me, that's a wild game to play and like people keep playing it.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's weird because like from the outside, it definitely seems counterintuitive, right? Like you and me, we think about stuff and we're like, oh, that company has like $100 million exit potential. That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And it is, but it's not a 20X. Mm-hmm. And so if it doesn't have the potential, like a market cap 20X plus, you know, sometimes whatever, 15, 20, it's just not worth what venture does because they're playing the home run game. And it makes sense. Like if you pencil it out, like, okay, it makes sense. But from the onlooker's perspective, it's kind of like playing The Bachelor. right? You're like, yeah. Or really, it's more like you're just a regular dude and you're trying to date a crazy chick.
Yeah.
Who's maybe super hot or whatever, right? Or maybe she's not even that hot, but she just has really high standards for okay. whatever reason and has managed to get a lot of dudes interested in her. And you're sort of like, I don't, what do I got to do to impress this person? And all the things that might impress you, you're just like, I don't actually want to end up in a relationship with you. It yeah. kind of feels like that. And I always tell startups this when they're going to raise money is like, if a VC's not into you, it's not necessarily you. It's just that they're playing a very specific game that requires them to make certain decisions, and it works for them most of the time. And it has, I mean, traditionally for years, like decades, right? So don't screw with the model, but that's the thing. There's alternative ways to get investment now. And there's a lot of different emerging funds and fund managers and like people doing different things. And like, those are awesome. Like, you should also consider some of those.
Yeah.
They're just not as prevalent. And then, you know, traditionally, like, I don't know, five even years ago when I was first starting my own consulting gig, it was starting to get to the point where it was like you had angel money, you could go to an angel investor or like raise a family round, or it was VC. And like, there really weren't any other options, or at least people didn't know about them. And now a lot of that stuff is becoming more regular.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the syndication, debt, you know, venture debt.
Yeah.
I think angels are getting more sophisticated in the way that they collaborate with funds and other people, not just trying to
other angels,
themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there's a lot more ways to raise money that had previously not been considered.
Yeah.
So now it's getting a little different, and it's not a good or bad thing necessarily to go to VC. You just have to know where you are and what you are.
Yeah.
And if you're not planning on being a unicorn, like, don't bother. But I get it, right? If I was going to go make a tech company that's going to sell for $200 million, and I knew that from the onset, I'd be like, hey, that's awesome. But yeah. I wouldn't go to VC and be like, can I have $500K? So they'd be like, okay, cool. But what's our exit at that? You know, you're probably just going to get in it to the next round and then be like, we don't need you anymore. We'll just self-fund. And then how do I get multiples on that? So
yeah, which is just a crazy game.
It is.
Because you're like, how do I get multiples on that? Because the VC game almost needs you to raise that A, B, C, D. You Correct. Need to like raise until you sell, and then
right.
you're out.
You need to outpace profitability. So you need to be growing so fast that it costs you money to grow.
Yeah.
And then you need to maintain that pace at all times.
Right, which is... That's the definition of anxiety. I think in the DSM-5, I think that's what it says, dude.
Well, yes.
I'm like, holy shit.
When I was a VP of sales, I knew another VP of sales who had a Silicon Valley guy who'd done, and this was like the fourth company I'd worked as VP of sales for. Mm-hmm. And I was fifth, maybe. Anyway, there was just a bunch of mess with the investors and stuff. And I was just like, oh, like drained. Yeah. And I was talking to this guy about it. And he'd done 16 straight quarters, 4 years of like growth, 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 growth. And then one quarter was like a little slower and they're like, you're done.
Yeah.
It's just like, what?
That's real life.
It's crazy. So yeah. I get it, but I also think there's a lot of value squandered. And so VCs can continue to do their thing and do well. And there's no problem with that. I don't condemn anybody for it, but I think you're going to see other funds emerging who are doing it a little differently. I'll shout out Tandem Ventures right now.
Yeah.
Here in our little neighborhood, they're doing some cool stuff where it's a combination of like, let's syndicate the deals that need syndication. Let's provide venture capital for the home runs that we feel like we can unicorn hunt. And then there's other alternatives, other ways we can fund with collaboration and get a lot of we can get a lot of good exits and not have to spin our wheels
right.
purely in that venture model. And I think they're going to do really well. So.
I think that's a good point because it's difficult to kind of, you know, if you don't have that background or you don't have that knowledge, it's easy to get caught up in like the venture of like, if I can't create a unicorn, then there's no point in me creating a company.
Yeah.
When like every day CPA, like one of the hardest businesses to buy right now is a CPA firm, and they go for 20X. I mean, you could build a CPA firm to $250,000 a year. That's it. And sell it for 1.8 tomorrow.
If you can get a roll up from like a regional or PwC, but.
Well, but like, but yeah, but I'm saying like, well, there's just other companies that will buy, right? Like, and so I'm just saying it's not sexy though.
Correct.
To create a CPA firm and sell it. Like
private equity is a total, is another route people neglect all the time.
Yeah.
And there's like, just think of most random funds. We're like, we only buy trucking logistics companies that sell, that do freight of this, you know, from this area to this area. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Is that even a market? They're like, how many of those companies are there? Like five?
Right.
I'm like, no, there's 100. And like, oh, okay. And you're going to buy all of them. Like, this is a real conversation like, I've had in the last like month.
And, or you're like dentists, they do that where they'll do DSOs. PEs. Yeah. DSOs. And you got, other ones like chiropractics. And it's almost like a, it's almost like the opposite or the other end of a franchise model.
Correct.
Where you just, every user's go buy all these independents, swoop them up under one.
And I kind of like, so like if you're a dentist, you have to be a dentist and a business owner. And a lot of dentists did not sign up to be business owners.
Well, yeah, they didn't go to any school for that.
So being a DS, going to a DSO sometimes makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Some DSOs are good and some are bad. And there's like a whole other thing there.
Sure.
Tangent.
Yeah, whatever.
But for me, even my company, like I love doing what I do. And just so people don't know, like I'm a revenue consultant, right? Mm-hmm. So I help early stage and growing companies with managing all those functions related to growth, marketing, sales, client engagement, expansion, client success, we call it. And I like what I do a lot. But again, I never intended to start a business doing that. I just did it as a means to an end because it was like, okay, I have talent that I cannot apply in a full-time setting with a startup because they can afford what I would want. And I also don't want to go work for a company that's like, you know,
who can't afford you, but yeah, now it's doing like, shit.
100 million. And they're like, actually just stay right in this box and please don't move out of it. But we also want outcomes that will require you to leave that box. But the second you leave that box, you're going to be castigated. So like, wow, this sucks. So I couldn't find a job there. And it was like, well, I'll tell you, I can like, maybe like I just give part-time to one of these startups, right? I could work part-time. So I started doing that. And I had three companies I was working for and they're all doing really well. Like they were listening. And all the stuff I was doing was having impact. And it was like, oh, this is cool. Like I'm getting a ton of leverage from my expertise and my work. I was like, I'll just do this. And so that's why I started my Ivy League consulting business. It was no intention of like, I want to start a business. Like I didn't want to do that. I always say, I wish somebody had started it like years ago and I could just go work for them and, and be like guy number one and be like, hey, you're one of my consultants. Like, awesome. I would just do that forever. And it was just, they just hand me contracts and I supply growth. But it's also better that I don't because you die in comfort. So it's been
a balance. Yeah.
I've gotten like five MBAs in the time that I've every year feel like it's like, oh, new, we're going to work in. I mean, that's how I know about DSOs, right? We work for companies that sold dental tech to dental companies. And so we have
this broad view
of a ton of industries. And like you have to learn. I mean, the principles always apply the same.
Yeah. Right?
So like, we've had clients, we've worked with Mrs. Kavanaugh's Chocolates, of all things.
Sick.
To try to help them like turn into a tech company and sell chocolates through Salesforce. Long story. That hadn't happened during COVID.
Yeah.
And then we've had companies that are like, you know, for your first, like we're doing our first 30K in MRR and we're going to, you know, try to scale to X and help them get to their 100K of monthly recurring and they raise 1.4 million. And it's like, oh, cool. Like Cinderella stories. Like we've kind of seen all those. And, but the principles apply across the board. It's all pretty much managing variables related to opportunity and challenge.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, there's money leaving on the table. Let's pick it up. And here's some things we'd like to do, but we don't know how to approach them.
Yeah.
And just managing those variables and like doing it in an intuitive way. It's like a skill set I couldn't teach anyone. You just have to like learn it.
Yeah. You just kind of come across it. Yeah.
That's what makes what we do so valuable, but it's hard to sell the intrinsic value, as you know. So up front, it's like, hey, you should pay me money to solve a bunch of problems that you don't know you have and that will ultimately make you lots of money.
Yeah. And by the way, it's going to take time. Like it's not going to happen in month three or four. Like it's going
to
take.
Like 90 days is like a good place to establish what might like the scope of what will happen. And usually I've paid for myself by then.
Yeah.
But you're right. In terms of what the actual outcome we're talking about, it's like 6 to 18 months.
Yeah.
And most of the time people are just like, I want more sales. And you're like, cool. Here's an idea. So you want more sales. Why would someone want more sales? Because they want money, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so if we want money, revenue is the name of the game, R. And I'd say go a step above that, a little more existential, and value is the name of the game. So what we're trying to do as a business is create value for a market, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we should be focused on. And so that's what I do. I don't talk about money. I don't talk about how much we're going to make. I don't. It's like, what can we? How are we providing value to market? In what ways are we getting our own way? In what ways do we not understand that market? Or what ways can we tell a story to that market that we're solving a problem that maybe they don't understand?
Yeah.
So I always use this example because it's a good one. And it's related to our little ecosystem of MX. When they were Money Desktop, they were selling budgeting software to banks, right? And when you go to bank managers and say, hey, we got budgeting software to sell you. And they're like, okay. I'm like, well, let me draw the lines a little bit of conclusion for you. It's because it will make your most profitable customers spend more money with you. I'm like, oh, okay, interesting. But when they change the script and the conversation from we sell banking software, they stop selling that. And they said, hey, listen, we have a way for you. We have this idea. We have a concept we want to present to you. And that's that you're only like 10% of your customers make you the most money. And we want to make your existing base of customers become more of them. And we want you to attract those and steal those from the big banks who you're always competing with. And they were going to credit unions. Now you got my attention, right? Because we're selling value. I'm not selling budgeting software anymore. I'm selling value. And then like once they understand what their real problem is and how they want to convert those, you know, bottom like 20% or sorry, the next closest 20% up to that, you know, most profitable customer category, leveraging our software will help that. And then it doesn't matter what you've got, right? I don't care what you're selling. It's supplying me this outcome and this value proposition that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And understanding that was what helped them grow from 10 to 30 million. And then like the rest is history, so to speak. But that's my job, right? Is to help companies understand that and build a value case. And then revenue follows, right? And most of the time it's like, okay, if we really want to provide value to our customers, we're selling this thing we have here and it's too much of a, it's too large a package.
Yeah.
Let's chop that up into a few smaller pieces. And now all those meetings that we, you know, we're converting one out of, you know, 15% on these meetings. Now all of a sudden we're converting 40%, 50%. We're getting like every other meeting is like a, okay, I will buy in at that early level.
Yeah.
And so it's things like that. Like let's do an exercise in pricing or offering. Like a lot of times that creates value. Or let's go to our existing customers. We've been in business I've worked with companies that have had 7 to 10 years in business and have just like, they've done really well. Like they're coasting at like 18, 20 million, but they've never like grown. They've never really expanded. They've just like turned the crank. And like every new year they lose one, they gain one. And it's like, cool, we're back to baseline. And you go to their existing customers and we call all of them and they're like, oh, you know, we survey based on like, how did this vendor relationship begin? What do you think this company does for you? What's the value of that? And in asking those questions, a lot of times it's like, oh, that stakeholder moved. That person who originally signed up that contract is gone now. And this new person just came in with like, here's the five things that this vendor does for us. And they don't realize that there are other services they could be consuming that they didn't know exist in that organization. And now we're like, hey, did you know we do that? I'm like, oh, we didn't. We're shopping for that. I'm like, awesome. Consider us first. You already like what we're doing. Well, yeah, if you guys can do that, let's talk, right? I don't need to go to the market. And hell no, I'm not going to send out an RFP. I'll just call you guys, right?
Yeah.
And now we solved that problem. Well, when we did that with one company, it made them like $3.5 million in 6 weeks. I think we closed on 2.8 of that in like from September to December 2021.
Yeah.
21. And My thing to them, they were super stoked. And I'm like, 2.8 million is exciting. That's awesome. And like, yeah, high five to me and my team. But where the real money is we now change the way your organization operates so that every month and every quarter, those conversations are happening in the long term. Hey, what else are you guys doing? Are you guys planning on changing and upgrading your ERP or making any changes with regard to X, Y, and Z? Because if you are, we want to support and help that. Maybe it's not us. Maybe it's another vendor we need to bring in. But we have relationships. We want to make your life easier. We are now a partner in your business. We're not just selling you stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
Value, right?
Yeah.
Big V. And so now that company changed the way they operate. So like, yeah, they made some money real quick. But to me, that was like, big deal. I paid for myself for a couple of years. but I want that. I want the golden goose, right? I want every time one of those eggs gets made, I want to get a little cut. That's what we're in the game of, right? So we get paid on retainer to go and solve problems. And we really quickly pay for ourselves. I would say like that 90 days. But the name of the game is value. And if you can create that, like money's a byproduct, right? I don't have to work that hard to like solve a bunch of problems. And then, yeah, okay, we can get more sales. But if you get better leads that are cheaper, that are more targeted, that have, that that you understand the pain of better, and you can be like a fortune teller or like a psychic to them, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know what you're, oh my gosh, like this is the thing I've been looking for my whole life. provided you're not just selling better mousetraps, but even then in a saturated market that you can differentiate well enough and be good at the marketing side that people convert faster. They convert for higher dollar amounts. They consume services or they start on the customer journey sooner and we have a lifetime value play that that engages them along the way and they become a higher paying customer within, you know, 6 months to a year. And we know what that path looks like. So we can spend a little more money on the cost of acquisition. Like if all those things start happening, right? I don't need to sell more. Selling more is just like, I always say like you turn the crank, right? Here's a crank. I turn and there's money that comes out the end of it. Okay, well, I can turn it faster, right? But at some point you're turning it as fast as you can. I'd rather add gears, right? That's what I say. Growth is turning it faster. Scale is adding gears. We really want to scale, right? So one single revolution makes three times as much as it used to. It might be twice as hard, but again, do the math, right? The output's greater.
Yeah.
So, and it is hard. It's hard to be like, okay, how can we really be intentional about who our market is? And how can we be really intentional about what our value prop really is? And how do we present that in a way where the customer experience from I watched an ad on Instagram to I'm going to tell all my friends, right? Like from prospect to advocate, that that has a mapped out process that is consistent with their whole experience.
Yeah.
And they're like, as soon as I sell that ad to here, like I've had the same experience. These guys are awesome. And even if your product's more expensive or not as good, right? Yeah. You can still outsell your competition. And people don't get that. It's like, just convince our clients we're better. And like, no, that's not what sales is.
Right.
Sales is not about convincing people that they need to do something that's not good for them or in their best interest. It's actually leveraging their interest to get the most maximum value they possibly can out of the market, right? So you as a salesperson is really just about connecting needs and benefits. And if you don't have a better benefit, and if that benefit also includes that you're a good person's going to take care of them, that should be weighted in, right? So when I say a lesser product can still outsell in the market, if you factor in what you can do for people, you don't have to convince anybody. You're just the shepherd, right? You're just shepherding them into their own self-interest for better. Anyway, there you go. That's my diatribe.
No, that's good.
Got plenty of time.
We got plenty of time, man. Yeah, absolutely. No, I like that. I like your thoughts on sales. And I really like your thoughts on kind of going into businesses and kind of helping them. When I work with small businesses, you know, that's probably the hardest thing is like getting clients, like acquiring new leads and then closing deals. But it always goes past that. Like you really have to understand. And this is what most people don't get. And I'm from Iowa. So the old saying of like, if you build it, they will come. Like a lot of people really buy into that. And you're kind of, it's really hard to convince people like one step further. Like, no, we've actually got to dig a little deeper.
Sure.
And because when you see that, right, just like dentists, they're like, they just want to go help people. And I think a lot of people start out with that really good intention, but they don't break it down enough for it to go to market in the way that they want it to go. Yeah.
Right. I get all my dental work done at the Roseman College.
Okay.
Because it's cheap and it's kind of interesting. I don't know.
That's right. I've never heard of it.
When we started our company and have dental insurance, I wasn't going to pay for it. So it's like, oh, I can pay $100 a year or something and then get, it's like $20 for every thing you need and super cheap.
Yeah.
Takes a little while, but it's funny because the dentists are so good there because they're in residency, right? So they're like following the book. And so they're very good, but they're also really, really like pedantic about like the sequence of things, the way they go. Whereas like a dentist who's been out in a while, they're kind of just like, it's got to turn patients and make money.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that way, right? Like as soon as you try to, or attempt to start doing the business of it, you're like, oh, everything's changed.
Yeah. When you start seeing the economics of how a dentist's office actually works, which is patients in, patients out.
But going back to the leads, like when you say like getting leads is kind of the critical component, and that's where most people like, we want to get leads in sales.
Yeah.
I'm like, the cheapest leads you can get are the ones you've already sold. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Like they always say, don't spend the same dollar twice. And I say, don't just make the same dollar once, but that's every business, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're all about net new. And it's like, there's so much money in just providing people additional value. And then the other thing that we're doing a lot for startups that I think they miss all the time is partnerships.
Yeah.
And their idea—
that's a big one.
Their idea of partnerships is like, oh, I'll refer you business and you refer me business.
And we'll sign a contract.
Yeah. It's like, what?
To be partners. Like, that's— you're like, what the
baseline. Baseline. Yeah. Like that should be established from the moment we establish that we have some kind of cross-sellability.
Yeah.
Like, oh, cool. We were aligned. That's easy. Cool. Here's my agreement. But how are we going to ensure that this transaction, that this like transactional flow happens on a regular basis? And not only that, but I want to look for partners who, when I sell my product to my or to their customers then spend more money with the partner, or their product becomes more valuable in its application because they're using my product. And now we're like an ecosystem. And that's way more valuable than a single company, because it ensures that the dollars that I spend in marketing are actually being, or I should say, the money that you spend to acquire customers is now being subsidized by your partners, right? Mm-hmm. Like all of you together are now have this joint lift in your growth model. That's like, oh, sweet. I could sell somebody a little bit of something today and know that the lifetime value is going to be greater because they're going to go into Dalton and he's going to get some. And that's going to help me get new leads, which are very cheap because they're being sent over as referrals, or it's going to enhance the value. Like I can sign them up on a small package because once they start using your service, they're going to need everything else that I do.
Yeah.
And it contextualizes their like use case. They're like, oh, you know what? I do need to buy the rest of that stuff. I should call John again and upgrade my package. And selling them on ideas is like, no, maybe we'll think about it, versus, oh, I actually am using this now and real life is happening and I do need that, right?
Yeah.
So if you contextualize that among somewhat disparate, not somewhat third party entities, even if we have an interest in a mutual interest, that still comes across less. Like if you sell me, it's easier than if I sell me sometimes.
Right, right. How do you build a partnership arm in a company?
Well, the first thing I do is try to analyze that ecosystem. And Lindsay, my co-founder, that's like her specialty is being— she thinks differently than everybody else. And so she can think really strategically about how those things play out.
Yeah. We've had Lindsay on the show. Shout out, Lindsay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She came on a while ago, probably 2 years ago. Have her back on.
Yeah.
Dude, it was
back in the Dirty Dough days.
Was it Dirty Dough days? Yeah, probably.
Yeah. It was a while ago.
Yeah. It was a long time ago.
And, but that, yeah, that's her like superpower. Well, among others.
Yeah.
Marketing, growth, like all of it. But, which by the way, is why we work together. It's not just because we're married. Like it was like, if I'm going to bring somebody into this, and it was 8 months in before I was like, I need a partner. Like, what? You're not like, you don't want to be doing all this stuff. You do. Come join me. And I was like, all right, let's do it. Mm-hmm. But she's just the best at what she does. And that's pretty— I think everyone kind of knows that.
Yeah.
But the way she does that is by understanding people's businesses, right? At the fundamental, not just like, what do you sell? But like, what is it you're trying to do?
Yeah.
And who are you trying to go to? And like, where do you want to be? Like, what's the vision? And then knowing those things, you can map out, like we call it an ecosystem map, right? Where you can sit and think, okay, if I'm a customer and I'm sitting in that customer's shoes, I'm consuming your product or service, but what else, because of that, what else is now happening, right? What other things am I engaged in business that require me to think about all the other stuff in that ecosystem? And then that just sort of naturally like self-selects who we're going to, like, well, if I'm going to get a car, I probably need tires. Okay, well, I want to partner with the tire people.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Tire people are going to be there. I probably want to figure out lube and oil, right? And like, okay, well, let's partner with an oil people.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, You
go like economies of scope, maybe instead of scale, which is like horizontal expansion.
Yep.
I like that. And I've always been fascinated with partnerships too. Mine is probably more primary in the way that I approach it, but they like partnerships really do help you just navigate. And I love your thoughts on the whole net new thing, because while net new is important, you're missing out on all these potential partnerships that you could be pursuing if you just got out of your own way, or like thought, you know, like really believe that you could contribute to a whole ecosystem versus like one piece of the market, right?
Well, go back to value focus. Yeah. if all I'm trying to do is sell people something, I'm missing out on the value I could provide them, because there's probably a lot of things that they need and are trying to accomplish in their business. And if I seek to understand their business at a fundamental level and then provide some value that maybe I can supply them, I'm also getting to consider other value that they might have in a marketplace, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, what else would you need if you're using me? Well, shoot, if you've already got what I'm providing you, you should also talk to Dalton, because,
yeah.
And then it's like, I'm now no longer just selling you something. I'm a trusted advisor. And that's what we want to be. We want to be partners with our clients and not just like sell them stuff.
And I love that you bring up cars, because that's where I cut my teeth in sales. But we took an interesting partnership that actually like really our business took off. So somebody presented data with us one time that if you bought a car, you were like 40% more likely, if you bought a house, you were 40% more likely to buy a car.
Hmm.
Because like what
that makes sense.
Some of the big reasons that house loans don't go through are like people are like, oh shit, I'm moving. Like I need a new car. So they forget to tell their mortgage loan officer and they go buy a car, and then their mortgage lender goes, hey, dude, you bought a car, now you don't qualify for the house. So we would go to mortgage lenders around Bountiful and be like, hey, if you refer like somebody's gonna buy a house from you and they're gonna go through you. Let them finish the whole process. But if they come and buy a car from us afterwards, we'll like reimburse them up to so much of their closing costs.
Nice.
And that was it.
There you go. And it's correlated. It's not just like, we'll give you a discount because you bought a house. It's like very specifically for the closing costs. And it might even be the same dollar amount as you could have offered as just like a bonus.
Yeah.
But because you're tying it to the transaction,
right?
It's like putting them in that frame of mind that like, oh, this is awesome. I'm buying into this entire package.
Right. And the loan officer loved it. Cause like there were really specific rules. Like you can't give referral things and mortgage things, but they still loved it because, first of all, they got paid. Second of all, they had something more to offer than another one outside of Bountiful. And that was it. So it wasn't necessarily, so we didn't even have to give them like a finder's fee. That was the cool thing too. And what some people, when I talk about like partnerships, it's like, oh, I'll give you like a referral fee or like now I'm just like a 1099 salesperson and that's not cool. Like I would rather have some kind of like, a real partnership, not like a, not like I'm your.
and even if you're not getting money, this is what I always say, like establish a partnership where if I get no money from referring this, well, I would do it anyway, because there's a value add to my client and I get some goodwill at least for that.
Exactly. Yeah.
People discount goodwill all the time. We have a mantra at Ivy League where we say goodwill is as good as capital.
It's just
less liquid. So.
But hold on though, because I learned about goodwill in my mind is always that accounting number, right?
How so?
So goodwill is actually a line item on accounting. So Coca-Cola, for example. Yeah. So Coca-Cola, like their assets might cost $1 billion. But if you want to buy Coca-Cola, good luck, because you're not buying the assets, you're buying Coca-Cola.
Correct.
And how they write that down numerically is the value of goodwill.
Sure.
So it's a real number that real CPAs use show like, no, like, yeah, I'm paying John whatever, but I'm getting more. And that difference is,
Right. Well, and the goodwill that you can't measure, I think, is like, if I help you with something, right? Mm-hmm. I refer business to you. I know somebody. I'm making it. I mean, like, I spent half of my time at Silicon Slopes just like filling up my notebook of, oh, I need to introduce this person to this person. And there's no benefit I can correlate to that where I can say like, oh yeah, send me a referral commission. Like, I don't know. I just know that there's like, these people need to meet and I want to facilitate that. And the more that we've done that, the more that we can rely on people to help us with stuff that we need, and not in a way where it's like, you owe me.
Yeah.
Cause that's where I mean, goodwill is not liquid.
Right.
But in a way where if I ask for help, I don't need to leverage anything other than people want to help. Right.
Yeah. And it's kind of like that. You do the right thing for the right reason.
Yeah.
Like, I think you made a good point where you've got to get people to the mindset that like you need to build your partnership thing, and you need to go in it with the mindset of like, if I never get a dollar from this, would you still do it anyway? And if the answer is yes, then you need to run it. And if the answer is no, then we need to do some introspective looking.
Right.
Like we need to go to therapy or something.
You suck at this. You might suck at this.
Well, I like that because I do the, I view, so every once in a while I'll help companies with podcasting.
Yeah.
And the first thing I say, like when somebody calls me to do a podcast, is I'm like, look, if you, if you're in this podcast game to get listeners and money, like, you're going to lose. I'm like, we can't compete with Joe Rogan and all these guys. Yeah, like, we're done. But if you get in it for the networking, the people that you're going to meet, for the audience that you're going to build, if you get in for all of that and you never make a dollar, would you do it for a year? And if the answer is yes, then I can help you. If the answer is no, then go do it yourself. It's how you do it for free.
Smart. No, that's a great way to filter out. Because yeah, that's true. Like, yeah. I always say people want, they want to spend a lot of money to get exposure, they think, but really they just want people to think they're cool. And they think somehow that's going to translate into business. And it's like, we're going to spend all this money. Like, I was talking to somebody, they're like, we're going to spend hundreds of, it was like literally more than $100,000 on just a video for that they were going to like distribute and try to get like, you know, that's audience.
That's insane, dude.
Yeah, to me it was too. I was like, well, hang on a second. Because I'm not asking you for $100,000. What I'm charging you is way less. And I can basically draw an ROI that's like 10X.
Yeah.
So that's fine if you want to do that in addition to what we're doing. But like, why are we doing that? Right. Like that, I just had to question, like, hang on, what is the outcome? Is it awareness? Right. Like, awareness is just intangible. It's just,
yeah,
anytime we're doing
it's a vanity stuff, metric. Yeah.
100%. Like, all that stuff should bolster a campaign we're measuring attribution, where, whether it's like paid search or if it's like a, you know, paid ads,
yeah,
or even if we're doing SEO, like all those things should increase because we put up a billboard. But a lot of companies just put up a billboard because they're like, oh, marketing, awareness. Like, it's just this general whatever-ness.
Well, yeah.
And it's not creating anything.
Yeah.
And so the better way to think of things, and what I love what you said about podcasting, is that you're not trying to get a massive audience. You're trying to get a very targeted audience.
Yeah.
That is highly engaged.
Right.
And this is what people now have come to realize full circle, is the influencers, even in, so I have an Instagram account I won't tell you about, but I.
Well, I didn't know what it is.
But it's just me and doing some stupid stuff. I have this alter ego and like I have only like 3,000 followers.
Yeah.
But because of the industry we're in and because of how my followers are engaged and they're all target audience, brands will send me stuff to like review or do things with because it's highly focused and targeted.
Yeah.
So I'm a nobody, right? In terms of like who follows and who engages with my stuff, but right. I have a big ratio of engagement to the amount of people that are.
Yeah. But it's a loyalty thing. Yeah. Micro influencers are coming full circle. Whole industry is coming full circle because you can make a lot of money with 500 followers.
Right.
I mean, if you have the right convert. If you have the right 500 followers,
it's all about conversion. So yeah, and, I think that's the same thing.
Yeah, dude. Absolutely. Like, but it does blow my mind that people want these big numbers. Cause like, dude, I hear that and I'm like, bro, I could show you how to start a podcast to get you all this exposure that you want. I could show you how to do it for $500 and 4 hours a week. Like, and you'd probably get the same. And the thing that blows me about mind about that is like, if you go like ask any marketer or like TikTok expert, it's like the phone camera is what the algorithm likes. Like we actually did this where somebody, we'd A/B tested it. They had an ad that was professional. Like, dude, they had the red cameras, they had actors, they had everything. And we put the ad on Facebook. The next ad was them running around with a DJI mic and their iPhone and just doing some funny little skit. That ad performed 100 times better than the other one.
Please tell this to my client. I'm going to cut this part and send it to him.
Yeah, you should. But it's like,
spend all that money on a video.
Well, because all you're going to do at the end of this is hate the video company. And they didn't do anything other than exactly what you wanted them to do. They
just did what you said. And you will be responsible to distribute that content and get something from it.
Yeah.
Like, but the market didn't like it. Well, was it because of the video? Because you thought somehow.
Right. But it's not but I've worked with video companies, like legitimate video companies. And $100,000 is, I mean, depending on like the length of it and what goes into it, I mean, their margins in a video company aren't great.
Right.
They're like 15, 20%. Sure. Like that $100,000, they're probably only going to keep 15 or 20K of it. So it's like, it's funny because I like, don't blame the video company, but like, you don't need $100,000 video. Right. You're not Nike, dude. This isn't going to the Super Bowl.
Right. And you don't, you're not trying to influence an entire market. You have a small group of people that you can target much more efficiently with way less money. I already know this because I've been doing it.
Right.
Like always, always, always start with organic. And yeah. people just don't think of it. They don't know how.
Well, that's what podcasting is for me. That's how I would do organic. Like spend $100,000 on a video. How about find the top four people that we want to connect with in our industry who have humongous audiences and interview them on a podcast over Zoom for free.
Done.
And just say, hey, we made some cool clips from you that we paid a VA $7 an hour for. We just post them on your thing. We already gave you content. It's yours for free. They're like, sure.
Yep. Here's what I learned from talking to the Visa executive. And
yeah,
you should work with us.
I mean, I got a good example of this was I interviewed the founder of Zenni AI.
Yeah.
Swapnail. And he posted something on his LinkedIn. I mean, I gave him everything. He had the video. He had everything. He just posted it. He was like, great conversation. This is what I learned. I loved it. Blah, blah, blah. And dude, I got like an extra 150, 200 followers like overnight because he just posted. I mean, but like, are you going to pay for that? Or are you going to just go ask somebody to chat with you for an hour?
Yeah. And it's a cumulative thing too. It's
like, yes, it does.
Like, yeah. It's like going to the gym. Same thing, right?
Yeah.
You don't just show up and like, all right, I'm going to work out for 6 weeks. And then whatever those results are, that's what I'm going to base my entire life on. The rest of like, relax. Dude, I had there's a 16, 19-year-old kid that go to the gym the same time as me at night. And they're always like, hey, what's going on, man? Like, how do you get big shoulders? You know? And like,
yeah.
I'm not even that big, but like, I think I could see if I was 16, I'd be like, man, I'm big. And it's like, oh, I just do it for a decade. That's what I told him. I'm like, just do it for 10 years, dude. Because that's what it takes. And like, not necessarily in business, but, and I'm probably going to get out there faster, let's be honest. But like, it's the cumulative growth.
Right, but the principle.
To accept.
Yeah, but the principle's the same.
Yeah.
Which is like, yeah, dog, like you're not going to.
I want virality. I want growth that a VC will get excited about. I'm like, maybe you don't need to do that.
Well, and not only that, but I always love to think about it inversely, which is like, all right, so let's say, you know, in your example, let's say that there was a way for a 16-year-old kid to become a world, like he got everything right away to be a world class bodybuilder or whatever, right? Like
you, it's called trend, by the way.
but your body probably couldn't physically handle it. Like there's a reason that it takes 10 years to get there because your body has to like
shortcuts
get this
are. They will diminish greatly. That's why I say like legit, like kids who take steroids young, it's not good.
Right. Because like, so I think about it inversely too, like with business is like, are you on 10 million followers today? Like, bro, dog, you can't handle that today.
Right.
Like this is one of the, I had a former employee. This was our exact conversation to what led to the falling out. I was like, we want that, but if we had it today, we couldn't handle it. We don't have we would get it and the whole thing would crumble. So like
squander the growth.
Yeah. It has to take this time. Like there's something very poetic about it has to take this long.
Yeah.
Because not only because like the lessons you're going to learn and the things that are going to help you there, but like if you got it today, you would die. Yeah. Like if you had it,
you know? You wouldn't care about it as much. It wouldn't mean as much to you either. So you're just kind of like, well, we just do it again.
There's a lot of, there's a lot of the philosophy and behind that is like, is very great because then it boils down to one of my favorite quotes in life, which is how you do anything is how you do everything. And are you going to take shortcuts your whole life? Yeah. Like you know what I mean? Like this thing isn't real. Like what you're looking for doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And you're just going there.
People want, they say shortcut and what they really mean is leverage, right? Like absolutely.
Okay. I like that.
Get leverage.
Yeah.
But like, just think about driving on a freeway. You ascend in gears, right? You like you start out in first gear for a reason. And then like maybe you can skip a gear here and there, but eventually you like, if you're going fifth, sixth gear on the freeway, that's because you incrementally made your way up to that, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. And you just start in fifth and slowly creep and creep and creep until you like, and that there's a reason for that. And this happens a lot in companies. And I tell them they have a gear ratio problem when they're telling your sales teams like sell more, sell more, sell more, but they're not really investing in product development. And they're not.
Or on sales enablement.
Yeah. Or most of their money comes from
post-sale.
Like I've seen this a lot where companies will, like I look at where their money's coming from and it's 2/3 of it happens after they sign up as a customer in some way. Mm. And it's like, well, then if all the money's there, why are we putting so much pressure on salespeople It's like, this is our revenue. So we should really just figure out a way to get to leverage the value of our salespeople in this part, the two-thirds part.
Yeah.
So how do we get them back into that? Maybe we funnel, hey, you want to get in the next package? Cool. Let me connect you back with Tyler, who was your guy originally. And maybe we start, maybe that's the process, right?
Yeah.
And it's always different. I don't want to say that there's like a way to, but you have to consider that, right?
Yeah,
but you have to
look at it, yeah.
And now all of a sudden your gears are like, oh, these are actually, we can apply leverage in the right category and get way more results.
Yeah.
And that could be seen as a shortcut, but it's right. not.
Well, and this is what I think one of the pros and cons is about, like, the entrepreneurial world that we live in, especially here in Utah. Like, I feel like there's a couple cons that come along with all of the beauty of the entrepreneurial spirit that's alive and well here in Utah. And one of those cons is like, I can drop out of school and start this thing, right? And when the data is like pretty clear, like there is value in degrees.
Yep.
We can have a conversation about why it's so expensive and the crony capitalism is going on, and I'm fine with that. But sure. like there's value in education. And then there's like, there's a crazy statistic that I learned in this podcast about like, if you know, if you've been in your career, well, you're a good example of this, right? Like you've been in your career for X amount of years, 10 years, and then you go start a company versus the guy who dropped out of school and started a company.
Yeah.
Like this guy's got a 90% chance of succeeding
yep.
over you.
Yeah.
Like it's not even like that. That is the legal definition of negligence, mm-hmm. like dropping out of school and starting a company, right? Like, which is, I mean, but yeah, but then we watch the videos of whoever, right? Drop Elon and all these guys dropping out and you're like, right. But like, they still had a, like a ton of knowledge that
right.
may have been missed either with education or with experience.
Yeah. Well, they knew what they needed to learn. Right.
That's fair.
That's yeah. the hard part too.
You don't know what you don't know.
School will, like, I'm glad I went to college.
Yeah.
And I'm also glad I dropped out. So sure. I went to Westminster and I like made it all the way basically to my last year and was already working in finance in my field back in 2010 or whatever, 2012. And then I was like, well, there's not really, I think the mistake for people is making this idea that if I get a degree, it's going to guarantee me something.
That's fair.
Yeah. That's the issue.
Yeah, right? That's fair.
I think there's value. Like you said, there's value in a degree. If you know where you want to go and what you're going to do next and like you're going to leverage that, like, cool, go for it. Yeah. You'll probably be fine. And I maybe could have done that and I might have still been in finance, but having gone through and got the, I mean, I got a Series 7 in 66 or 65, oh, cool. whatever.
Yeah.
And got my licenses to be securities rep. And I only used it for 2 years, 3 years, and then realized I want to be in the startup game and started operating inside startups. But I had like the finance background gave me a good edge when I started in
yeah.
startups because I understood how revenue was created. And so it made my sales a lot, it made me better at sales because I didn't have to guess or just
or be relearn like, finance
or and just hustle. Yeah. Like yeah. I'll just hustle and we'll make money and figure it out later. It's like, yeah. I could take a little more intentional approach.
I felt like, yeah,
but it wasn't getting a degree wasn't going to save me, like give me the saving grace, but it did teach me a lot of things that helped me ask good questions.
Yeah.
And that's the mistake I think a lot of people make is that, I don't need to go to school. And maybe you don't, but like you might want to try it just so you can.
Well, I remember having this conversation with a guy. So I got, and listener of the podcast know this, but so I got my degree in accounting and then an MBA. And I just remember, I feel like those helped me because it wasn't what I was learning. It was how I was learning it. So for me, it wasn't about so much of like, because one of the biggest lessons that I learned in my accounting degree had nothing to do with the accounting principles. It was the first day of intermediate accounting 2, which is the hardest accounting class that you can take. Hmm. And the professor got up and he said, he was like, yeah, so it was like that classic movie scene where he's like, yeah, 60% of you guys aren't going to be here. You're going to drop out in 3 days. The first assignment, he dumps the shoebox out on the table with a bunch of receipts and just stuff. It's called shoebox accounting. And he's like, all right, that your project is to figure this out. There's the reading. Good luck. And he said, and by the way, if you get stuck, he said, start working on the problem because you'll figure it out as you go. But if you never start working on it, you'll never figure it out. And dude, sure enough, like I was in a group, half of the group left because they dropped out. We had to figure this thing out. But it was like, how do you problem solve? Because it was that classic, like, well, what's on the test isn't what's in the textbook. So what am I supposed to do? And it was like, And the professor would just write back. He's like, congratulations. Welcome to intermediate accounting number two. It is nice. Like, figure it out. Right. And so I was like, but that was a beautiful lesson for me because it was like, this is how you problem solve. And this is real life. And now he's like, I actually don't care. And I remember listening, or I remember talking to somebody about this, and one of my mentors at the time, and he was like, if you don't think that's what real life is like, you're crazy, because your first CEO is going to probably do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, so anyway, for me, it was like how I learned, not necessarily, because I don't remember anything about
that. Seeing the entrepreneur in me would have been like, okay, I'm going to go hire an accountant, so do my homework for me. And then going to figure out on the syllabus how poorly I can do on this test and cut out the amount of days I need to show up.
That's exactly
so that I can pass this class.
That's right. Cause C's get degrees, baby. That's right.
Dude, I was way too pragmatic about, I call it pragmatic. I think it's pragmatic.
I did. So they had, when I went to school online and they would have the grades posted and I would do the math. I'd be like, I would do exactly what you said. I was like, okay, I don't have time to study for this cause I work full time. I was like, so if I get like, if I do, I know I can ace this test, which means I can get like a 60 on this test and get a B to pass. And I did that all the time.
And here's the thing. If I have to go work somewhere where they want to know what my grades are, bro, I'm going somewhere else.
That's true. I tell, yes.
I'm not trying to work at Pricewaterhouse. Like, I'm not trying to go to Goldman.
No.
And Goldman won't
but I've had
either, by the way.
I was going to say, I was like, I've actually interviewed at both, except for PwC. But Goldman doesn't, they don't care. They just want to see the three letters behind your name and then And then they want to see, Goldman wants to see the three letters behind your name and that you're willing to work 80 hours a week and lose your family. Dude, those guys are ruthless.
They are.
They're ruthless at Goldman Sachs, dude.
When I was in private client, even at Fidelity, it was kind of like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
I want to go work for somebody else.
Well, I think that's also a funny story just about, but again, like one of the cons of like entrepreneurial work, which is like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to work 80 hours for Goldman, but do you want to work 80 hours for yourself? Because you got to pick one. And like I think
like I said, I never wanted to start a business.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to do this. I just want to show up and do what I do really well. And it's fun and it's fulfilling. And it's like,
It's like the purpose behind it.
I had a meeting the other day where it was like someone who was in a role that was not being valued in their, they had a lot of talent. They just couldn't apply it because they were being sort of like pigeonholed. And I moved a few things around and like found that there's way more money we can make over here. Like, and to fix a lot of problems. And it was just me doing my thing, but they were just like so happy. They were like crying in this meeting. And it's like, that's the kind of stuff I want to do all day. Right.
Yeah.
And also, I have to run this business. Like, that client, I got to invoice them and ask for their money. And I've been working for them for a month and forgot to bill them.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. I do all the time. Whoops. I actually don't do my own job for my company like very well at all. And I always tell people that. I'm like, I should just consult myself. I bet I could make a lot of money.
if you just apply.
I just said, why don't you sell some courses? I don't know.
That's fair. Well, dude, I appreciate your time, John. But before I let you go, where can everybody find you, follow you, all that good stuff?
Mostly just on LinkedIn. That's where we live.
Yeah.
Ivy League Sales, IVIE, John Ivy. I post once a month.
There you go. Well, that's fair.
You get as much as you can out of it. I probably should post more. I want to make video content because it's easier to sit and type things.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't feel like anybody watches videos anymore.
I feel like they watch videos.
I'm going to give it a try.
Why not? Yeah, why not?
You know what's funny? I post stuff on LinkedIn that's like just stupid. Like just, you know, like, hey, I'm going to run for governor so that I can stop Californians from immigrating. Tons of engagement, right?
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, hey, here's like really important nuggets that I've learned about making money in a business. And it's like, crickets.
Nobody gives a fuck.
What? This is weird.
They're like, bring back the funny stuff.
Yeah. Like, okay. Are you cool?
You're like,
bread and circuses. let Rome burn.
Dude, that I just envisioned that in my head. You got like the comedy guy and then the guy who's up like really serious and they're like, bring back the idiot.
Yeah. We don't want personal development.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, stop talking to us about personal growth and how to succeed.
Bring that TikTok influencer that reacts to other TikTok influencer videos. Yeah. Mind.
I did reaction videos. Actually, reaction videos are dope. Those are actually probably really, I would say.
If you're interesting and you're cool and you're reacting to things that someone
people
cares
care about.
About.
Yeah. Yeah. But you, the thing with reaction videos is you got to be funny. You got to be like really funny or like very technically smart and be like, this is how it's all breaking down.
If the subject matter is interesting, I want to see what 10 or 12 people think about it.
Yeah.
And they can all be saying the same thing, but because they're saying it different in their own way, it's like, oh, I'm getting a little bit different edge out of it.
I like that. But all right, John, thanks so much, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.